everyone ready to rock and roll?
All right, now we're ready to rock and roll. 10:02, we call this meeting of the Finance Committee of the Arizona State Board for Private Post-Secondary to order. First order of business, can we get the minutes of the March 28th, 2019 Finance Committee meeting, acceptance of the audio recording of the September Finance Committee meeting as the official meeting minutes? Not needing them.
Oh, so.
Oh. Should say. Good. All right. We do introductions.
Rachel Pierce, administration.
Kevin Mountain, State Board staff.
Keith Blanchard, State Board staff.
Paul Mittman, board.
Dick Lipke, board member.
Terry Stanfield, executive director.
Okay, so as promised, we have honed our alphabetical skills, and we are going in reverse alphabetical order. This is the first for the board since I've been on it. And so we are going to start in item 3 on the agenda with Medline School.
Thank you. This is Chad Science from Medline School. Sorry, I got a frog in my throat. I guess the only rest I might have now is we're continuing to do our teach out to close by the end of the year. And we pretty much just have everything in place for that. That's really the only really introduction I have, to be honest.
Okay. And could you introduce yourself, please?
Oh, I'll tell you that. I'm sorry. I'm Chad Sines. I'm the Chief Operating Officer.
Okay. And is Ms. Herkins-Gabriel also on the phone?
No, she's not.
Okay. Okay. Mr. Lupke, do you have any questions or comments?
When do you anticipate finishing the teach-out?
The 31st.
31st of December, correct?
Oh, yeah, sorry. I'm sorry. I've got allergies today, so my brain's a little fried. Yes, 31st of this year, December.
Okay. And how many current students do you have? According to our records, looks like you have more than what were reported on your on the documents you submit.
We look like right now we've had a lot that left that didn't feel like they were going to finish. We have about 35 to 40 right now current students.
Okay. And in the license renewal, it looked like there were 89 current students. Are those all either drops or leaves of absence, or where are they?
Some of them are leaves of absence, and I noticed that there were some that were extended leave that hadn't come back that we had kept on there because they hadn't officially dropped. But so we reached out to everybody to let them know what the situation was so that they can make the decision for them. And we had, like I said, about 35 to 40 that decided that they were going to continue on.
Can I ask, asking staff, from a given that the school is in teach out right now, if students take a leave of absence or they drop out, where does that leave them? Because after the 31st, they wouldn't be able to come back, or they wouldn't be able to complete their programs.
That's correct.
Typically, I mean, we've kind of, they're not accredited, and we followed the BES rule that they have withdrawn or on LOA and cannot return within 90 days, they would be eligible for strife. But if they're long, well, not long before this, but so they have like a 90-day. For those at this point in time, they would probably be not eligible.
Okay.
Would they be refunding those students' tuition that took leave of absence and didn't come back?
Mr. Sines, did you hear the question from staff?
No, I didn't.
Will you be refunding the questions? Will you be refunding the tuition should they not return?
Our students pay a month-to-month tuition, so the tuition they pay like for September is just for the month of September, so there's no pay ahead for anything.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions?
I do have a question for you before I forget. Oh, sorry. Did somebody else talk and I didn't want to interrupt?
Nope. That was you talking.
Oh, sorry. There's a little bit of an echo. What do we do with the records? We have the previous owner's records and we'll have ours. And I don't want to forget to ask, what do we do with those?
I will reach out. This is Kevin with the State Board. I will reach out to you and provide you the structure that we need the records in and a time frame that you would send those to us.
Okay. Okay, good. I just didn't want to not have a question asked. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Great. All right. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Sines.
Thank you.
Okay. Next up, Fortis College. Please introduce yourself. Yourselves.
Hi, Jason Holman, campus president, Fortis College Phoenix. And I believe on the phone should have Jason.
Yeah, this is Jason Meek. I'm the director of financial planning and analysis representing Fortis.
Okay. Great. Would you like to make a statement?
Not a lot of change from.
And you on a healthy, happy teach out.
Right. Any update on the audit? I think the 6/30/19 audit.
Yeah, I believe that financial audit is scheduled to be done out next month.
Okay.
Okay. But profitability and liquidity of the parent company is up.
Okay. And then, I'm not sure, will we have these guys back before the before December?
You said your last date will be December 20th.
In which case, did you farewell?
And we've got to renew.
Oh, we do.
Last week's.
Okay, good.
Last week's.
Well, I'd like to entertain a motion to approve the vocational and degree granting licenses with the stipulation that the $150,000 surety bond be maintained and to continue quarterly reporting. The quarterly reporting probably will not be necessary. Can I get a second?
Second.
Do you agree to the stipulations?
We agree.
Wait. We haven't voted. All right. Paul Mittman, aye. Good?
Good.
Thank you very much, and thanks for an orderly teach-out. You guys have been really good. Okay. Advanced business learnings. Come on down.
They're under, though. Mr. Chair, did you do the approval for the license of MedLink? Do we need to do that?
All right. Can we do that?
Yeah.
Great. I will make a motion to approve the regular vocational and degree granting licenses with the stipulation that the $15,000 surety bond be maintained and continue quarterly reporting.
Second.
Assuming that they accept the stipulations. Paul Mittman, aye.
Dick Lupke, aye.
Thank you very much.
Now we get back on track.
I'm sorry, I just said goodbye to a very good friend who this is probably her last day. So I apologize for any either missteps or seeming the flippant remarks. I don't mean it that way. Okay, so Mr. Jenkins and Ms. Morris. Would you like to make a statement? Sure.
So we're here for two reasons. Obviously, for the second quarter of our business plan. Generally speaking, both of those items are financials from the period of 2019 that have not reflected the bank's business plan. It's made for all of that.
But in the meantime, we have a mild dialogue with the active military person who is going to duty and out of the military. Skill grid allows the last 6 months of their active duty period to be they can apply for a position out of the community. They remain paid by the DOD, but they come out of the FRs and they work in the industry that they want to get into, and they become students for certification. Understand that these are, in some cases, especially in Maryville, these are new locations, so we need to be talking to somebody about the fact that we now have a second facility that has our license and we will operate the other ones.
The ones at Grand Canyon and, because those may, you would reach out to Kim, licensing manager.
Balance sheet as of September 24th is $75,000 on P&L as of September 19th. Cash basis is $75,424. On an accrual basis, $213. So it's a very different financial situation from June 29th. Our business model is we purchase training materials for our clients in advance, and then we go to the client. So we have cost of goods sold on the books and no revenue corresponding to those cost of goods sold. Since then, our clients are not paying in current, and that's why there's such a difference. Negative.
Yeah, I think you might have lost me just for a moment there. You started talking about a cash basis versus accrual, which are accounting methods. The figures you were giving us, is that the cash in bank? Is it net income, gross profit? What exactly are the numbers you're speaking of? That, is that revenue? Okay, so that's tuition revenue.
And commercial revenue.
Okay.
On an accrual basis, which is not only cash in the door, but also current invoices that are due, that's the $213,000.
Okay, all right. So you've earned $213,000, you just haven't received it yet. Okay. I'm curious about the where you are cash in the bank. Looking at a P&L at the end of June, and it shows $10 for advertising, and so I'm beginning to wonder if you have enough money to advertise. Do you? Is that an accurate number? Your P&L shows that you've spent just $10 in advertising?
We don't actually advertise.
Okay. So true. This is a good number then. It must lead the industry because I don't know any other school that's only spent $10 in advertising in 6 months. That's remarkable. All right, cash in the bank. In terms of your liquidity, where are you at right now? Just roughly. Okay. Okay. These new opportunities are positive.
So do you do your accounting both on an accrual basis and on a cash basis?
We actually do.
I have to be bizarrely ignorant. I thought that most of the documents that you receive
were renewals. Like the quarterly report.
So the reports in the spreadsheet that you guys fill out is cash, but the quarterly financial statements are then.
The new ones, though, that we've started trying slowly on the new people, are they on accrual? I don't remember. Are they accrual?
I believe so.
A couple of them you'll see we have new report. The new reports, those are, because the ones that they're on are old. So those who have been on reporting thought, we're not switch. As you add new, do the new report. Kind of a hodgepodge.
Okay.
The June finance shows that we cover cash. retirement was captured. I have that wrong.
Oh, no. I'll be more than, that was correct, but we'll be more than happy to have you do the new report. They're really.
Very nice.
That's great.
Anyone who's interested, we're more than happy to switch.
We also exceeded our projections for the students who have currently enrolled in 2 hours today.
Referrals. You could decrease your advertising.
Yeah, cut that advertising in half.
$10.
Just one picky thing on 6/30/19. You said that was cash or accrual.
That was
financial statement.
She said cash.
It says cash. Yeah, cash.
Cash.
We can work through that. Yeah, between Kim and myself.
Yes, ma'am.
And I assume these are all in Arizona, right?
Yes,
they are. Okay. Congratulations on all the good work.
That's a
vote. Oh, wait.
Got a vote.
A, move to approve the regular vocational and degree granting licenses. Surety bond will be maintained and continue quarterly reporting. Ensure the applicant, you agree to the stipulation. Entertain a second, a motion.
Second.
Paul Mittman, aye.
Dick Lipke, aye.
Go. Time for the refrigeration school. We've got Pamela on our list. We have Pamela Oliver and Allison.
I'm sorry, could you spell your last name?
Zajac. Zajacek. Pamela Oliver is on the phone.
Great. Would you like to
Davis Hostetter from the Halifax Group is on the phone as well.
Okay. Would you guys like to make an opening statement? Anyone?
No, I don't think so.
Do we have any questions?
Yeah, when was the acquisition finalized?
On June 14th. And in our additional information you requested, we did provide the opening balance sheet for June 14th, 2019.
Okay. Have you run any sort of projection on your composite score? noticing the amount of long-term debt that you have right now. Do you have a rough idea of what your composite score is?
For this year, we'll only be audited from June 14th through September 30th, and we expect that the composite score won't be good because of all the transaction expenses in there in that short period of P&L time. But then going forward, we do expect it to be positive. It probably won't be over one, but we do have a letter of credit posted with the Department of Ed already.
Okay, so you've posted a letter of credit. They're not putting you on any sort of restrictions in terms of cash flow?
No, not that they've said at this point. And we do have $10 million in cash in the bank right now at August 31st. The June financials we provided showed, I think it was $8.8 million, but we're over $10 million in cash right now.
Very good. And at the previous meeting, the leadership team was going to be kept intact pretty much at the refrigeration school. Has there been any substantive changes in the leadership team?
No changes, and we definitely plan on keeping the leadership team intact.
Okay, well, you have a smiling president here in the room, so.
He's great. We love him.
Great. I don't have any other questions either. I think that.
We're just here for reviews.
We're just here for reviews.
To determine, because of the operating loss, as of December 31st and the change, it was referred to the finance to determine if a surety bond was required and if you wanted them to go on quarterly. At this point in time, they don't have a surety bond.
There were some questions I thought about the Halifax financials, because I think that might be where the operating loss is. I think in general the schools are very profitable.
Yeah, what is very
I'm happy
profitable?
To answer any.
Well, the one question I would ask then is, what is your definition of very profitable?
At the school level or at the corporate level? I mean, they've had
the two schools. In particular, refrigeration.
I think they've had $3 to $4 million of operating profit for the past, I don't know how many years, but several years.
All right, very good. Thank you.
Okay, I think we're good. Great, we're good. We're not going to require a surety bond or quarterly.
You guys are good to go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And now the reverse order begins. Webster University.
Good morning. I'm David Handerhan, the Luke Air Force Base Campus Director. I'm joined online by Maggie Lauer, who's Webster's Senior Finance Director and Controller, and Dr. Beth Russell, who's the Assistant Provost for Graduate Studies. She also oversees all state licensing for the university. Those, my two colleagues are at main campus in Webster Groves, and I'm out here at Luke Air Force Base. As this is our first full appearance with the board, I'd just like to share just a couple things with you. We opened our doors at Luke Air Force Base in 2001. We're regionally accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. All of our graduate degree programs at the Luke campus are under the Walker School of Business and Technology, which is accredited by the Accreditation Council of Business Schools and Programs. I might note that both of those accreditations were recently renewed last year. And as you all are probably aware, they do an extensive examination of courses, practices, as well as forward-looking plans and finances. Speaking specifically to Luke Air Force Base, our student enrollments are made up of military, veteran, and civilian students, and we average about 100 full-time students per term, 5 terms per year. I'll speak specifically to finances for Luke Air Force Base and then turn it over to Maggie and Dr. Russell for the overall Webster outlook. Over the past 3 years that I've been the director, Luke has collected approximately $1.66 million in tuition and fees. Deducting the cost of operations over those 3 years, the Luke campus has sent over $1 million to the Webster University main campus. That's as much information as I have for the Luke campus. We've submitted our information through Director Stanfill. I'd like to ask if you have any questions now as far as Webster University overall, that they be addressed to Dr. Russell and to Maggie Lauer online, unless you have any questions for me.
So, Mr. Handran, you mentioned that over the last 3 years, there's been, was it $1.6 million in tuition?
$1.66 million in tuition and fees.
Okay. And then the next number you mentioned, you lost me there.
Taking away all overall operating costs, things like that, $1 million, just a shade over $1 million. To the main campus from the Luke Air Force Base operation.
Okay, so $1 million of profit went back to the parent company. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. This is Maggie. I'm going to interject on this one. Just to be clear, that's the direct profit for the campus. So that would be any facility costs, recruiting costs, cost, staff costs only included in it. So direct costs related to the tuition revenues. Obviously, the overall university incurs finance expense, accounting, HR, overhead type of expenses, university president, legal, IT support, library, and accreditation expenses that are not included in the specific location costs. Obviously, if we were operating as a single operation in Arizona, the profit would be much less.
Okay, so
he's only referring to direct profit.
Maggie, if you could just clarify then, the $1 million that David just mentioned that went back to the parent company, is that, I'm not sure what that $1 million is. Is that $1 million in general administrative corporate expense?
He's talking about the profit in Arizona that is tuition less instructional and staff costs right. In the state of Arizona.
All right, correct. Again, thank you.
Sorry, I was trying to walk a fine line here since we're a nonprofit. I didn't want to use the word profit.
We are one entity in the U.S., so we're not a parent company in St. Louis. We are just one organization, and that is one location of ours. Luke Air Force Base.
To follow up on Mr. Lukey's question, in the I think the most recent financials that I have are from May of 18, which shows $551,000 in revenue and a net profit of $347,000, roughly $1,000. And so that would really be gross profit. There would also be or net increase in assets, but gross, not including any administrative costs. And so given the fact that the university as a whole has been losing $5 million, $20 million, $16 million over the last several years, including what I found in the May 19 in-house financials, where does that leave the security of the university as a whole, including Luke Air Force Base?
Sure. So one of Webster's greatest strengths is our operating reserves. We have we are very diversified in where we have programs. We have programs internationally. We have programs on military installations such as Luke, and we have them in other metropolitan city locations as well. So we have we had surpluses in previous years that we have invested in in our with our investment managers, and we have sufficient operating reserves to carry us through these tough times that we've had in the most recent years. So we've tapped into our investments to fund operating in the last couple of years. Now, that's what we've done in the past. What we are doing going forward is we have had some significant changes in how we recruit students, understanding that we are highly tuition dependent. We have worked to improve our enrollment figures. We've outsourced with two specific groups, one to focus on retention and one to focus with on recruiting students. And first, with the retention, the organization that we worked with and the software package that we're using with our academic advising group and our professors, we have seen a marked improvement in our retention figures. As far as enrollment management, we just started that partnership earlier this spring, and we have already found that we have seen improvement on the number of students being recruited for our online programs. Online has been one of our emerging spaces, but it had kind of stagnated the last couple of years, but we have seen an improvement this already this fiscal year for our enrollment in that group. So we think we're having great things happen in terms of bringing students back and bringing in new students. So we're positive that we're going to be not needing to use our operating results going forward.
And this is Dr. Russell. I'm going to emphasize what David Hanrahan said. We have been scrutinized over the past year between HLC, ACVSP, U.S. News and World Report. We have satisfied all of these entities that our plans moving forward are going to significantly improve our financial health.
And then just one more thing that since Dr. Russell mentioned it, we have also taken efforts internally as far as what we can do to more efficiently operate. And so we have one of the more strategic things we did is focus on class sizes and where are we performing classes, how are we offering classes for students. It's not just a matter of it's better for us financially to have a larger class size, but it's also important for the student experience that there are a number of students in their classes. So we have taken steps to reduce, small classes while still having classes on the schedule that the students can take that they need to fulfill their degree requirements. So we've cut significant costs out of our bottom line by just looking at how we schedule.
At the Luke campus alone, over the past year, we've reduced our instructor costs by 20% by utilizing new technologies such as broadcasting classes across shared campuses using live internet, where the students don't have, they're getting the same classroom experience as they would be if they're sitting in the classroom, and we're able to, optimize the use of our faculty, our well-trained faculty, deliver those classes across multiple locations, not having to pay for multiple faculty, which is a big cost.
One of the benefits of Webster and our large footprint is that we offer the same class in multiple locations every semester. And, it's not great to be in a class that's three or four students, but as David mentioned, where we can offer the class in multiple locations, but some of the students are, seated separately, but we're all having the same student experience. We're all interacting through various technologies. That comes at a cost savings to us, and it actually improves the student experience as well.
So your fiscal year, does it end in May?
It does.
Okay. So the most recent numbers we've had to look at, I think, were May 2018, so the end of fiscal year 18. So you've had, what did you post then for net profit in fiscal year 2019?
We have a loss of $16.3 million. That includes currency exchange loss of $1.8 million. So it would be before currency a loss of $14.4 million.
Okay. And the balance sheet at the end of May 2018 showed assets of about $42 million. and you're losing money at the rate of $20 million in 18 and $16 million for fiscal year 18-19.
Sorry, assets of $14 million? I'm not sure.
No, the
assets of 42.
Oh, 42, yes. That's current assets.
Right. And then what was your composite score then at the end of your fiscal year 18-19?
Yeah, 2.2.
Okay.
Okay. And then just finally, you were talking about reserves. So are you talking about reserves that are restricted? Because I see the endowment income, and so that would be off of the endowment. Is that the reserves that you're talking about, that backstop fluctuations?
So I'm talking about our unrestricted reserves. So we have put away, I think our quasi-endowment is about $90 million right now that we have invested. This is board designated, but should we need to, it is unrestricted asset that is for university operations.
Okay. Just where is that on your, where do you show that on your balance sheet?
Where do we show our quasi-endowment?
Yeah.
It is part of our long-term investments, but it's also, because it needs to be in balance, right? It's also in our net assets unrestricted. If you go to our footnotes, there is information about the university quasi-endowment. Let me see. It would be in our, see what the footnote number is. Actually, the very first page. They're not numbered. Note number 9 in our financial statements, where we describe our net assets.
Okay, great. Very much. All right. I have no further questions. And just make sure that we don't have.
Just for review.
All right. Well, thank you very much to all of you from Webster University.
Thanks.
Okay. Moving on to Southwest University of Visual Arts, we have a lot of people.
Two and one on the phone.
Oh.
We're down. Who are the two that are here?
We brought refreshments for, looks like 8.
So I am Julie Mayers. I'm the Chief Business Officer from Southwest University of Visual Arts.
I'm Camden Hardy. I'm the Interim Chief Academic Officer from SUBA.
And then,
sorry, what was your last name?
Hardy.
Kevin Hardy.
Camden, C-A-M-D-E-N.
Anyone on the phone?
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me?
Sure.
My name is Cynthia Beving. Last name is D as in boy, E, V as in Victor, I-N-G.
It's Cynthia Beving?
And I'm the Beving, yes.
Okay.
And I'm the current bookkeeper for SUBA.
Okay. All right. And whoever is, get someone over the phone.
Yes, could you?
You guys could all mute your phones.
Until you need to talk, please. Thank you.
Okay, good.
So, and I'm sorry, what was, you had a question?
Make an opening statement.
Oh, actually we don't this morning, so I do apologize that we weren't prepared for that. We do have Cindy on the phone who is going to talk about the quarterly reports that we submitted, and so, I guess we can turn it over to her.
Okay.
Okay, can you hear me?
Sure.
Yes.
There we go. Okay. Sorry about that. I was trying to figure out the mute thing on my phone, but that's good. I just took over in August. They had had some power bookkeepers that didn't stick around very long. So we were doing January through July in about a weekend. But we did pull some numbers together, and we're continuing to work on it and get everything uploaded into QuickBooks, which is a new software for them this year. So we know that some of our numbers were incorrect, but we are continuing to work on those and getting them in there. We did not have all the information. There was a prior bookkeeper that had some information we needed, as well as just getting all the data in time to get it done. So do you have specific questions? And we could maybe go over some of these accounts, and I can tell you what the progress is right now, where we might stand on those. Or I've never done one of these, so I'm kind of, you guys tell me what you need, and we can go from there.
Okay. Could we please start with your receivables and whether or not you have adopted a new aging policy for writing off bad debt?
That would be for Julie. I'm not sure what their policy is about how long they keep tuition on the books before they write it off.
Up until
we have not written anything off the receivables yet.
Up until the 2018, the end of 2018 audit, our receivables stayed on the books for 2 years after a student graduated. We are in the process of rewriting that policy. We're working with the accounting firm that did our audit last year, and we are analyzing that to see if it is a viable process or if it needs to be if the dates need to be changed. There was a proposal from an auditor a couple years ago that we're keeping the receivables on the books for too long, and we should keep it around a year instead of the 2 years that we're currently keeping them on the books. So that's kind of where we're at with reviewing that policy right now.
Okay. Did you change accountants?
The accounting firm that does our audit, that conducted our audit for 2018, is Beach Fleischman. And we have Cindy, who is our bookkeeper right now, and she's the one who prepared the quarterly reports for us.
Okay. So, you know, the danger of having receivables that are as old as 2 years is that they inflate your position.
Right.
It doesn't give the reader an accurate description of what's going on in terms of the value that's supposed to be represented in those financial statements.
Correct.
Many schools are writing them off. If there's no payments within, say, 4 to 5 months, they're writing them down.
Okay.
But you're still wrestling with writing that off, it sounds like.
That's, like I mentioned, that's one of the things that we are reviewing. And it is likely that we are going to change that policy to only keep them on the books for a year.
Okay. It's probably likely that we'll continue to ask you the question as you appear before this finance committee.
Can I just ask, in December, you showed almost $2.5 million in receivables?
Yes.
And on tuition of $2.8 million?
Correct.
I think to sort of like reinforce the point that it's a very high percentage of receivables, and I think it's hard to understand what the actual financial viability or the state of the such a high percentage. I mean, it's one thing if you were keeping receivables on the books for 2 years and it was a minimal number, didn't have a material effect on.
So So can you give us just an update on how you're doing for fiscal year 2019? Are you projecting to have a positive net income?
Yes, we are. Cindy, can you speak to that? Do you have that information in front of you based on your what you
have? As of right now, and we, like I said, are still doing a little bit of cleanup, but year to date, we are showing a net income of $1,435,000.
Okay. Okay. And Cindy, would you happen to know how much cash that you have on hand then?
Just a second, please.
Roughly, just, is it $1,385? Is it $10? Is it?
We're showing total cash right now of $303,536.
Okay. And you're not on $303,000. You're not on restriction.
Yeah,
the department doesn't have you on any sort of restriction.
Correct.
Okay. And then lastly, my last question is just, can you give us an update on, have you met all the concerns that HLC had? Are they cleaned up? Do you have that behind you now? Or is there anything that's still outstanding?
We have, everything has been cleaned up. We have one more interim report due in October, mid-October. And we will get that submitted probably within the next couple of weeks. And everything that we've submitted up until this point has been accepted and approved, and we're moving in the right direction.
Great. Okay. That's got to feel good.
Yes, definitely. See the wheels spinning.
Just trying to think. For October, what is it that you have to report on?
The report in October is related to our operational strategic planning. It's really just a review of the focus visit that we had. What was it, April? Mm-hmm. So we've already fulfilled the expectations, so we just need to put that in a report and send it in.
So specifically, what sorts of things?
The focus visit was about academic assessment and our strategic planning as it relates to our operations. So we've already filed our report for the assessment, and strategic planning is coming up. So.
Anything about administrative control, or is it just limited to academic and strategic?
Just academic and strategic planning.
I'm sort of biting my tongue here, but the elephant in the room, sorry to say this, is that given the findings in your last audit, the report from the Department of Education, Department of Ed, plus the fines that you incurred either withholding refunds or a lot of things like that. It seems to me the elephant in the room is, do you have the financial controls procedures in place to not have to go through that on a regular basis? The auditor is pretty stress that. I think I don't know if you were here a year ago. Complaint committee. Not so much with academic assessment, academics. What are you doing to not have to either pay fines or spend a lot of energy
question, and although we appreciate seeing all of you, we don't want to come up here anymore. And so we are working on our intern.
That would be fine. it's not like. Go ahead.
So we are working on our internal processes and seeing where those have gotten off track or maybe become a little bit broken, and where we can fix those to eliminate, for example, the complaint and the refund that we had to do a few months ago. And so that's really where we're spending our time. And like Camden mentioned, with our strategic plan, that is one of the objectives this time around, is really reviewing those processes and making sure that everything is functioning the way it should be.
That's a major point of emphasis for this year, too, for us. So that's a big area of concentration.
Mr. Chair,
yes,
just based on the stipulated agreement that was signed on 6/4/19, we at this point in time have not received any of the student records or communication from the school regarding student records.
Okay.
Chair, if I could also ask that when your report's due to HLC on October 1st, correct?
It's early October. It's not the 1st.
Okay. Sometime in October.
Yeah.
Because in the HLC, it says upcoming or progress reviews, 10/1/19 interim report. If you would please copy us at the State Board at the same time that is sent as well. Any of their communications?
Kevin, when was the stipulated agreement signed?
Signed on 6/4/19.
Okay. So it sounds like you have some homework to do.
Yes.
Be a good thing to come back, not having that still outstanding.
Because the next meeting will be December, Finance Committee will be December 12th.
Okay.
So the quarterly reports, you'll be notified that they're due, and make opening statement, who's here, and so on and so forth.
Okay.
We're not on the complaint committee, but I remember that this was...
It's resolved.
This was resolved with the students.
Yes, they refunded his.
Okay, so here's the, be blunt. I think the complaint committee spent a lot of time on this. The board spent a lot of time on this, meeting through. You have no idea how many hours you spend reading all of this stuff, and you seem like very nice people. Frankly, were like unbelievably irritated at the behavior or the performance of the student. So I would just ask that whatever you're doing from your strategic plan, get your act together procedural standpoint. You're supposed to have records here as part of a stipulated agreement. Student records, they need to be here. Otherwise, it's our staff's time. 100 schools to keep track of. It's our time to read this stuff. Probably, what I do on Sunday, before. I'm not saying it's not for me, but like in aggregate, this is not good. And it's not good for your students. And if the Department of Ed is not the case, or the HLC, it's a lot of extra work that it's easier to just do it right the first time. Figure out what you need to do. I'm not trying to be like a jerk about it, but you seem like earnest people who want to do a good job. I don't know if you need to bring in someone, if it's your director who does consulting or bring in another accounting firm. There's a lot of things that I think.
Have a good drive back.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Okay. Our Desert Institute. Good morning. Please introduce yourselves.
Tracy Lee, President.
Mark Porcello, Vice President of Finance.
To make an opening statement.
Sure. We're here today with the Q2 financials that show over $800,000 in net income. More recently, our August results were literally record-breaking, which we're pleased with, in terms of both lagging and leading indicators. We had literally our highest monthly start ever, volume-wise, in August. And then for our leading indicators going forward, August had our highest lead volume and also the highest gross enrollments during the month, which we define as admitted applicants. So we feel like we're operating healthily and happily, and pleased to report that. We weren't sure if the request tied to licensure for the December meeting meant that you needed the update on DAC and Department of Ed for that meeting or this. So I believe that's been provided to you now, and we're prepared to talk about that if that's for today or if that's for December.
Do you understand the sign language that she's giving us?
You haven't figured out my sign language yet?
You have a copy, a printed copy.
Yeah, well, your husband needs to be at the next meeting.
That's probably not a good idea. The copy of the report that Tracy sent this morning.
It's just a summary of the approval from DAC for both change of location and change of ownership, and the fact that we're still waiting on Department of Ed for final.
You'll probably wait a while.
That's what I've heard. Our auditor and legal counsel said, you're in line, it's under review, hang in there.
Well, I like all of your financials. I think they're in really good shape. I think you're clearly making great progress. So I really don't have any questions for you, other than maybe, how did you do it?
We're prepared to answer.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, if you're asking...
You probably spent more than $10 in advertising. Is that correct?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
Having said that, I would say this sounds cliche, but the great combination of people, process, and technology. We have some really good managers who have really embraced both that people management and process management side. On the technology side, we were operating out two separate systems between admissions and financial and student services. We migrated from Velocify to Campus View for all the good and bad, but at least we're in one system now. And
system did you go to? Campus View?
Campus View, Nexus, migrating to the web-based version. So there were a couple hiccups along that transition, but we feel like we have those ironed out, and we're just full throttle.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, and when is when does your fiscal year?
Or calendar, so December 31.
Great, I remember.
Nope, you're one of the superstars this morning.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Please introduce yourselves. You're on the phone.
Rebecca?
Heather?
Heather?
Bueller?
Oh, hi. Hi. Yes. I'm sorry. Hello. We didn't hear your name. Yeah, hi. So Heather McAllister from Penn Foster College, on with me as Rebecca McGovern, as well as our corporate controller, Tom Lichard.
Okay. Would you like to make an opening statement?
Yeah, this is Tom Lichard. I'll go ahead and make the opening statement. I want to start by saying that we have continued to grow the business. We're making significant improvements in our cash flow and our profitability. In fact, this is the strongest we've been financially in our company history. We're seeing very strong returns on our capital, and we're seeing a nice, robust market for most of our programs. We've also been investing heavily in our business and our academic programs. We've also paid down some of our preferred stock, returning some of that capital back to our investors to help reduce our cost of capital. In terms of our financials through June year to date, our revenue is well above plan, well above prior year. Our educational income is also well above plan and the prior year. In fact, we're 40% better than plan through June year to date. Our net income, although it does show a loss, there were several one-time adjustments related to some investing activities that we've been making. We also have some tax benefits that we're going to take advantage of in the last half of the year. So that will reduce our tax liability by over $1.6 million from what we have accrued. In terms of cash flow, our net cash flow after we add back depreciation and amortization on our goodwill as of the end of June is about $5.7 million. That's well above where we were last year at the end of June. And if we add back all the one-time restructuring costs, we expect to have net cash flow, which represent more of a go-forward basis, of about $9 million. Year-to-date through June, we expect to double that by year-end. Our adjusted cash flow, after we add back the tax adjustment that I was referring to, is about $10.7 million. And then if we back out our investing activities and CapEx, which primarily relate to our D2L learning systems, we're investing more in a more interactive, more user-friendly learning system that should benefit our students. We're also investing more on internal content for our online materials as opposed to purchasing that from the outside, which has also caused us to have lower costs and have improved our margins. When I back out that CapEx, our free cash flow year-to-date is about $8.2 million and about $5.3 million versus plan. Part of our success has been an increase in our student starts and enrollments, which are well up from the prior year. Our composite score was 2.14 last year. We expect to be similar to that this year. I'll stop there to see if maybe you have any questions.
First question is, could each individual on the phone please introduce yourself so that we can make sure that we get the transcription correct?
Yes, of course. This is Heather McAllister, the General Counsel of Penn Foster College.
Okay, and I'm Tom Wishard, Vice President and Corporate Controller.
And this is Rebecca McGovern, Director of Regulatory Compliance for Penn Foster.
Great, thank you. Any questions? It looks like in 17 and 18, you had losses of over $9 million, close to $4 million, and then in 18. And as of 6/30, looks like you already show a profit of roughly $2.9 million. Did I get that correct?
Are you looking at the college or the total Penn Foster consolidated?
I think I'm looking at Penn Foster consolidated.
Consolidated, we have a net loss of $1.8 million. Penn Foster College, I think is what you're looking at. That's a $2.9 million profit through June.
OK. Okay.
Pentecostal College is a subset of, yeah. So Pentecostal College, yeah, is a subset of our total consolidated program. It's a little bit misleading because some of the restructuring, depreciation, amortization, all those costs are not allocated back to the different schools. We don't have a separate allocation for the college program. But if you look at the educational income, that's a pretty good representation of that specific college, and that's about $3.4 million June year-to-date.
Okay. And then just out of curiosity, what tax benefits are you looking at the second half of the year?
We have significant net operating loss carry-forwards that we expect to be able to utilize now. In prior years, as you saw, there were consolidated net losses. But now that we're being much more profitable, we expect to be able to utilize those NOLs.
Okay. So nothing new, just applying what you already had to a profitable enterprise.
The other thing is with the ASC 606, with those new rules, we're going to be able to accelerate some of our revenue, which has changed our position in terms of our deferred tax asset position. We used to have a valuation allowance against that because we expect everybody to utilize that deferred asset benefit. But with the ASC 606, we expect to be able to use that. So now that valuation allowance for that deferred tax asset, we expect to be able to take that to income.
Okay.
That's part of the benefit we expect to see in the last half of the year.
Okay, great. All right, well, thank you very much. I think we are good to go. Have a good day.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Right. All right, New Horizon.
Hi, this is Cindy Sutherland. I am the VP of Career Development at New Horizons. I have the phone on the phone with me. Well, I just want to say real quick, we lost our CFO early August, and I have our fractional CFO, Scott Pilka, along with our COO, Vicki Marin. Scott?
Hello. Scott Pilka.
Cindy, this is Terry. If I could ask you to please email me who's on the phone so we can make sure we have the correct names.
Absolutely, Terry.
Thank you.
Okay. Hey, well, thanks. Would you like to make an opening statement?
Yes. I'm sure you got our first half report. We had a first half report pretty much on plan. Second half is we're expecting to be probably 10% better than the first half of the year. Enrollments are up, and we're trying to leverage our instructor expense by slightly increasing the ratio of students to instructors. One thing that you may want to know, because I heard a lot of discussion about tax, career development solution is taxed as an S-corp, so we don't see income tax or deferred tax on our P&L and or our balance sheet. And with that, Cindy, anything you'd like to add?
Well, we're looking better. We're definitely looking better. One of the questions that you guys gave me at our last meeting back in July was placement for 2018, and 2018 our placement ended up for the year at 77% overall, which I'm pretty proud of. But
okay. Great.
So Cindy, you or someone else on the phone, could you answer what the final projection looks like for year end 2019? Will you be showing a net profit at the end of the year?
Yes, we expect to have a net profit of at least $500,000. Our revenue should eclipse $5 million to maybe $5.25 million.
Okay.
Okay. Just state in our report, I think we had a little miscalculation. I think we reported the current ratio at 3.59 for fiscal year 2018. Is that right? It could be 1.9.
Yeah.
So just so we can carry it forward in the aggregate reports. Because I think that was, you know, I think you guys are in better shape than... Okay. And I think we're good. Any updates on the business plan that you'd submitted? Anything different than what you had already presented? You submitted the 2018 to 2020 business plan. So do you feel like you're on track kind of incorporating all of these new franchises?
Yeah, I think we are. I think we look good. Scott, Vic, how are you guys feeling about it?
I was going to say, yes, I agree. This is Vic. I agree. We do have our 2020 annual planning session coming up next month. So if there's any update to our plan, we can obviously update you folks as well.
Okay. That sounds great. Well, thank you very much, New Horizons. Have a good day.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
All right. It's time to galvanize. His still.
It is. You threw us there with that reverse order.
I'm sorry?
I said you threw us there with that reverse order this morning.
I know.
So on our toes, right?
Makes two of us.
Though for you, it wouldn't really matter because you're kind of smack dab in the middle of all the school. Could you please introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm Diana Vowles, General Manager for Galvanize Phoenix.
Meryl Krish, Program Director for Galvanize Phoenix.
And we have two folks on the line.
Hi there, it's Carl Meyer. I'm the Chairman of the Board of Galvanize, and I'm also the Acting CFO.
Jesse Kittle, I'm the VP Corporate Controller.
And would you guys mind spelling your names? Because I got like a quizzical look from our staff.
Sure. Yeah, this is Carl. So it's Carl with a K. And last name is M-A-I-E-R.
Rebecca, but I misspelled your name three different ways.
You're not the only person who's ever done that.
Jesse,
I promise you.
Jesse, could you?
And then Jesse, J-E-S-S-E, last name Kittle, K-I-T-T-E-L.
Good. I'd like to make an opening statement.
Yes. Happy to be back here again this morning. Wanted to share with you what's going on in Phoenix, and then my colleagues in Denver can answer any questions on the overall company. The Phoenix campus of Galvanize is still very much in ramp-up mode. The campus is very full. I think a couple of you have actually been there, but we have 140 companies operating out of the campus. So we have the companies, the students, the events. As you recall, our model is a little different than some schools. The most notable addition this year has been Google. So Google now works out of our campus, so that's pretty cool. We continue to have phenomenal outcomes for our students. The first cohort of this year had 100% placement rates within 2 weeks of graduation, so we're super pleased about that. We've graduated almost 150 students to date in the Phoenix campus. Most of them are staying in the Phoenix area, which we're very pleased about because part of our mission coming here was to help close the talent skills gap that exists for tech roles in this market. Very high salaries. They're taking roles at large and small companies. Our biggest hiring partners have been USAA, McKesson, and Allstate in this particular market, and they keep coming back for more talent. So we're delivering a very quality outcome. As a reminder to this group, we acquired Hack Reactor Software Engineering School last year, so we've been in the process of integrating that into the Galvanize operation. In Phoenix, we added the software engineering curriculum at the beginning of this year. The Hack Reactor software engineering program, so it's Hack Reactor at Galvanize, it is a top-notch, rigorous program. The acceptance into the program is very challenging, though. So in this market, we continue to find the market is not as evolved as some of the other markets we operate in, like San Francisco and New York, for example. So we're not finding as many qualified candidates here. So while the community has welcomed us, the market has welcomed us, our hiring partners love us, our biggest challenge has been filling cohorts, and that continues to be a challenge for us. So what we are doing about that is we have standardized our prep materials for all of our curriculum throughout our company. So we've enhanced those programs so that students are better prepared once they jump into the cohort to be successful. It is an intense 12-week program, so we need them to be prepared when they walk in. We are also, and my colleagues can touch on this too a bit, overall strong expense management. We don't spend money if we don't need to. We have a strong instructor pipeline, and we can flex that staffing. So if we have a large cohort coming in, we can add instructors to cover that versus staffing up in anticipation for large cohorts. Basically, we believe this market has strong potential, particularly with Phoenix being one of the fastest growing tech markets in the country, and we are focused on delivering strong outcomes to our students and to our hiring partners, delivering them quality talent, and we are being fiscally responsible to get to profitability.
Diana, this is Carl. I'll jump in. I know you were speaking most specifically about Phoenix, and I'll just give a couple of updates on Galvanize as a whole. One thing I wanted to make you all aware of is that our investors, and Galvanize is owned by private equity investors, and our board of directors made the decision in April of this year to make a change in senior management. And just to sort of, you know, cut to the chase, I think the reality is that the investors were not overly pleased with the levels of profitability or the levels of losses that the company was generating. My mandate, certainly Jesse's and others at the company, is to get the company to profitability rapidly. And I think the good news is if we look at already what's occurred sort of since the change happened in mid-April, we've reduced our operating expenses. You know, we're running at north of $5 million a month in operating expenses. We've already brought them down by about $600,000 a month. So we're making progress towards becoming profitable. So that's sort of update number one. And then number two, we did just raise new equity capital. Actually, we closed on that an additional $10 million last Friday because I think our investors are happy with the progress that they're seeing and with the plan that we have in place.
Wow.
And certainly happy to answer any questions that you all have.
Okay, well, thank you. That's... you're trending positively on the expense side. Would you care to project where you might be in terms of profitability by year end?
Yeah, so we I know you guys look at and I think we presented to you all down to the net loss. We look at sort of loss from operations and EBITDA losses, and we expect that on a monthly basis, kind of at an operating loss perspective, will be closer to $250,000 a month on losses, and we expect that we will become profitable at operating loss level in the first quarter of 2020. Yeah, that's on a consolidated basis.
Okay, so on a consolidated basis, you ended with a loss of $28 million. That's with six zeros. $28 million at the end of 2018. So you're saying that you're going to average a loss of $250,000 per month. So you're only going to show a loss of $3 million for the year.
I don't think this.
No, that's not right. For 2019. So if you look at the financials that we share with you guys, the consolidated financials for the quarter ending June 30th of 2019. I don't know if you have those in front of you. It showed a loss of $8.3 million for that six-month period. And what I'm saying is that we are shrinking our losses on a monthly basis, and we anticipate that by early 2020 we will be break-even.
And your fiscal year is at the end of December? Or
correct.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. We're 12/31 fiscal year.
All right. So you've dragged me into 2020 without answering how you think you're going to end up 2019. Should I guess that you're going to be around 12 million, 15 million?
Yeah, so at the EBITDA level, we'll lose about $6 million this year, and at the net level, we'll probably lose about 10 to 11 million this year.
So you've lost 8 million through 6 months, but you're only going to lose another 2 million July through December.
Net income. Yeah, so again, we may be talking apples and oranges here. As I said, we track our profitability at the EBITDA level, and so on that, we expect that for the year we'll lose about $6
million. Okay. He speaks fluent EBITDA. All right. Thank you, sir.
All right.
Okay.
And we think we'll be on the net income. We'll lose about $15 million. So about half of what we lost last year, the 28 to 15.
That's what I was looking for. Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
And with that, the reason why it's even at the 15 is we went through some restructuring, and we have one-time expenses of a couple million dollars that's in there, and that's why you don't see it, $8 million through Q2, then almost an additional $7.5 million or $7 million for the second half of the year. That includes that couple million dollars of restructuring, and that's how we're getting to that break-even.
Okay. Well, I'm sort of speechless, but it's always interesting to see you guys. I should say, with some kudos to the Phoenix crew, that it seems like the Phoenix campus seems to outperform the rest of the country. So I'm not sure if it's just operating costs in places like San Francisco and New York, et cetera, et cetera. But I would make a motion to promote Diana Vowles for the to help lead your institution. I'm just kidding.
Awesome.
All right.
Did you catch that, Carl?
I sure did. I sure did.
I'm sorry. I stepped out real quick. What was that?
Thank you.
Okay. Good.
Thank you for the report.
Order.
Thanks.
Okay.
What's next?
Just processing. I still have to process the 100. We've been here.
Okay. What's a few million between friends?
All right. Moving on to Fletcher Pilates, all the way from Tucson, Arizona.
Hi.
Hey, please introduce yourself.
I'm Deborah Mendoza, the Director of Education for Fletcher Pilates.
Deborah, and?
That's it.
No? Okay, good. All right. Care to share?
Not much has changed since I last saw you, since it was just in July, where the reports we gave to you at that time included most of second quarter already. So not too much has changed in terms of what we submitted to you. We're still projecting and following along where we thought we would be. Second quarter is, we have a slight loss, which we had kind of expected, but are looking to be profitable by the end of the year with where we're at. Some of the things that don't show that have happened more recently since the second quarter is we have paid down significantly on the some of the credit card lines that we had, so that our we're that's a good thing. That was one of the things that we said we, our plan was to do, and we have been able to do that recently. So that's kind of probably our biggest, I guess, change in terms of following along our process we had presented to you before since the last time we saw you.
Okay. Great.
Just breathing deep. I think it looks pretty good. Cash is strong. You're trending well, and you expect to make money at year end.
Yeah, it's not going to be massive, but, you know.
Okay, not enough to retire on.
Right, exactly, but in the positive, so.
Relatively speaking, you're $100
million. I know.
For some reason, when I was going through this, I thought that I saw that you had a profit in by the end of June. I showed a
Yes, we are. Sorry, I just should clarify. In terms of the actual education expenses related to the program, because we don't take a lot of income in during second quarter for our programs, I guess specifically relating to the educational programs is where we had that slight loss. For the actual quarter for the business, yes, we were overall doing, we're staying right where we were in terms of our process.
You showed a loss in 17 and 18.
Yes.
So profitable in 19.
So far, yes.
Good.
Keep it going.
You have to sit up straight. It's like a
posture alignment.
So we should all have good good posture here. The other thing, you know, I'm not exactly sure. There was something on your balance sheet, and so as you go through these, I think I made a similar comment. You showed customer deposits of $56,000 as a current liability, which if those are deposits for future classes, right, that would be a liability. But you should also show it as an asset.
Yes, you did mention that last time we were here, and we've discussed that internally amongst us and with both the bookkeeper and because a lot of that income is actually being kind of turned over in how we do kind of cash usage. It's not in a separate like account that's being held for when those occur. We aren't listing that separately. I think our goal would be to get to the point where that was being held within a separate account, so then it could show much more as an asset. But until we get to that point, I think, you know, keeping it and tracking it in the way we have been makes more sense for us.
Your business. I'm not sure that it needs to be that complicated.
Okay.
That it's. I think it's just how you track. That particular line item.
Okay.
And it would just make your balance sheet
look a little bit better.
Better, which is fine for us because we could read through all of this. But as far as the business is concerned, if you want to go to the bank for financing, or you want to start a new project or something like that, it will improve your balance.
Okay.
So either way, but I'm not an accountant either, and so if you're talking to our accountants who say, keep doing it this way, okay. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Carrington College.
Hello.
Introduce yourself.
Yes, I'm Robert Hendrickson. I'm the Vice President of Compliance and Regulatory Affairs with Ember Education, which is a shared services division of San Joaquin Valley College, Inc., which is the whole owner of Carrington Colleges.
Great. Would you like to make a statement?
Yes. For the first two quarters, the four campuses within Arizona had a net profitability of $384,000. which is below projections, but is due largely to a heavy investment in student recruitment activities well in excess of what was the original projection. We have where student starts and total enrollments were below projection, and so the investment of resources in that student recruitment is designed to increase that enrollment and then basically prime the pump for future tuition revenues going forward.
Okay.
So you've sort of consolidated the four schools into one lump report, one lump number in terms of net 384,000. Can you? I would only ask this question because in preparation for the meeting, the reports that were submitted did not have June 30th numbers for a couple of the Phoenix schools. So are you able to kind of report campus by campus in terms of profitability?
Sure. I thought that that's our mistake if it didn't get
well,
translated.
Well, it may not be our mistake. It may just be the way it came through, but I had the column of lots of zeros and looked like it hadn't been filled out, so I'm not. Okay. It may just be a glitch somehow.
So our Phoenix North location, our net income was $149,768. Our Phoenix East location was $249,568. Our Mesa campus, $228,183. And our Tucson campus had a net loss of $244,612.
Okay. So three positives, one negative.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, good. Thank you.
Sounds like Phoenix is carrying its weight as far as the overall institution.
Yes. Between the Phoenix and Mesa combined, they allow for us to continue to invest heavily in the marketing in the Tucson market with the intention of pushing enrollment forward.
Okay.
And I thought I heard you say you're projecting to be still positive by year end.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I don't have any other questions.
I'm good.
Okay, thank you for your report.
San Joaquin College.
Sorry?
Are you from Modesto, California?
I live here in Arizona, so it's very easy for me to come to these meetings.
Better.
Central, you're Modesto, California, Bakersfield, Turlock.
If you came all the way from California.
Oh, no, I'm local. I live in Tempe. So.
Okay, good. Thank you very much. All right, Brighton College. Oh.
Good morning.
Right. Please introduce yourselves.
I'm Paul Zagnoni, president of Brighton College.
Sean Dixon, director of student services.
Would you like to make a statement?
I can. Just a brief statement that we are trending this year over last year. Revenue's up, income is also up, and our losses are a lot less than the previous year.
So I thought I saw a profit in Q1, right? Are you on a calendar year?
We are, calendar year.
So, and it dropped into a loss in Q2. And so what accounts for that, and where do you see the second half of the year heading?
Hopefully, we've had a good August and September so far, fall enrollment. So hoping by the end of the year we can get it to a break even at least is what we're looking at. Summer's tough.
Ready for questions?
Yeah.
All right. So, Paul, where would you guesstimate your composite score to be by year end?
We're not a DOE school.
You're so not DOE. Okay.
Composite schools.
Yeah, I noticed your composite was like, ooh.
We don't do that.
Sure, we should throw you a life preserver or not. All right, and but you are DEAC.
DEAC accredited, correct.
Okay. And where do you stand in your
reaccreditation?
Yeah, your matters with them.
We have a submission due December 1st. We have two standards yet that we're reporting on. One's financial and one is curriculum. Two more answers to get them December 1st.
Okay.
Good. I think we spent enough time going through your change of ownership.
Thank you.
So we'll abbreviate this one. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you.
Good morning.
Please introduce yourself.
Absolutely. My name is Shannon Yurkic. I'm the CEO of Tremont Education, which is the operator of ASIS, among other companies in the portfolio. To my right is Laura Tott. She's the regional director of ASIS, Massage Education. And on conference line, I have Shannon Bonder, who is the corporate controller over in at the corporate level of Tremont Education. As a statement.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks, Shannon. As a statement, this is my first time really addressing this panel and this board. I want to kind of give an update of where we currently stand and what the process is. 2019 has been a year for us that has been mainly restructuring, improving, and consolidating. From a restructuring standpoint, our former CEO, David Merwin, was exited from the organization in late February of this year. At that time, litigation also followed from the ownership group, Kuzari. The Kuzari Group, in that litigation filed in New York, there was a series of charges in regards to fraud and misrepresentation in regard to contracts with the purchase and the acquisition of the entities overall. From that aspect, from the improving standpoint, the Kuzari Group, as well as myself, enacted me late February in as CEO. I previously had a working relationship with the management team from a consultative level to come in and help reorganize some aspects of our corporate division in regards to our accounting, as well as our management teams at all locations. In improving the portfolio specifically related to Arizona this year, we've had some wins that we'd like to at least bring up and discuss. Mainly, on May 30th, we were able to reach an articulation agreement with Prescott College for all four of our institutions here in Arizona. That articulation agreement allows for our students to receive transfer credit for continuing pursuit of their higher credential degrees and so forth, and it applies to every student that we instruct in Arizona, and it's a great value add. Additionally, in June, we absorbed a lot of students through a partnership with Cortiva. As they were shuttering their doors, we took on their candidates and we're able to seamlessly integrate them into our programs to help them with their completion of their education and that aspect. You may not know this, so I want to make sure that at least I disclose it. In regards to the portfolio, at time of change of ownership, which resulted in 2018, a letter of credit was posted with the Department of Education for $896,000. That letter of credit was renewed in 2019, but will be reevaluated because we are currently consolidating our East Coast and focusing mainly on our West Coast operations. Currently, two of our East Coast schools have been shuttered and closed through acceptable and approved state accreditation and Department of Ed procedures. We are closing our last one on October 31st of this year and solely focusing on ASIS, our activity and our growth in that area. In regards to accreditation, we had accreditation visits for ASIS this year at all four of our locations. In the subsequent meeting in August, we were put on deferment status, which is non-punitive. There was wanted responses that are due by October 31st in regards to six topic areas. We're very confident with our responses and our submission to that for our renewal, which will be decided in December. Obviously, once we submit our responses to ASSET in regards to their request, We will also include Arizona State in regards to that information there. And then lastly, in regards to the financials, I know that this morning, I believe, Ms. Stanfield was in, received updated audited 2018 financials. Additionally, I want to just kind of highlight from an HQ expense from what was reported on the first one, that number, and Shannon Bonner can speak more clearly to it, there will be some adjustments being made because of the way it was stated in regards to it actually being loans that could impact the HQ and ultimately how it's appearing for the financial health of the organization. But I'll let Shannon kind of speak to that. But I wanted to at least debrief you on that information, you know, going into this meeting. Shannon Bonner?
Yeah?
Do you want to speak to the financials at all?
Well, I guess if there's any questions, does anyone have any questions or...
I guess there's two outstanding issues that may or may not be outstanding, but one was the deferral by the accrediting body regarding the failure to disclose the letter of credit, and I believe also did not disclose it to this agency. So where is that at? I assume that they don't take that. We don't take kindly to that, and I assume that the accrediting body. As of August.
I apologize, but I can't hear what you're saying.
Yes.
I'm hearing about every
things
report
where the ACCET, with particularly with respect to the failure to disclose the letter of credit and I believe also failure to disclose the lawsuit that had been pending.
Yeah, so I can speak to that, Shannon Bonner. In regards to notifying asset, it's in our response on the October 31st, as well as the letter of credit. There seemed to be an oversight from, obviously, my predecessor in regards to providing ample notification. However, it was addressed in the on-site visits that occurred in both June and July with asset, the accreditor, directly. It is continued in our response. All information has been updated to be able to reflect that. And also prior to the or around the same time of the asset response that's due on the 31st, we may have a reforecasting because of the fact that we'll be shuttering through approved teach outs those three institutions. The letter of credit could minimize because it'll be a percentage of what the Title IV utilization was the previous year with ASIS. So right now it's ample to cover obviously any fiscal liabilities in the organization and will continue to be in place because of the change of ownership thereafter.
Okay. And what's the status of the lawsuit?
Okay, so the lawsuit currently as of this moment, litigation is still against both former owners, the majority owner and the former minority owner. To date, the one of the individuals, Mr. Robinson, is reached out to our counsel to try to work on settlement. That is still ongoing. There hasn't been much movement, and they're expecting movement to occur as of October 31st. The only procedural movement was solely for Mr. Robinson. There was a initial court ruling on a procedural basis, we believe, to get some aspects dismissed. However, it's under appeal and will be going to trial, and he has reached out to our counsel, Mr. Robinson, solely to try to rectify and settle. And we're in, their ownership is in conversations with Mr. Robinson on that area. All charges are still current with Mr. Merwin.
And those are all civil charges?
Correct.
Okay.
So when you close the three schools, you'll be down to one school?
No. So we'll have four in Arizona. We own a main campus in Tucson, Arizona,
right.
Mesa, Arizona, Prescott, Arizona, and Flagstaff. And then over the umbrella, we have a lymphotomy school, which is not Title IV approved, runs continuing education out of Florida, but that's in the Trumatra portfolio.
Okay.
So once we shutter the three schools, two in New York, one in Maryland, and the reason for the shuttering on the east, so everyone's aware, we were above benchmarks in both of our branch campuses. Unfortunately, the main campus was not redesignated quick enough and was subjected. We went to an appeal status. We won our appeal to the sense that it was remanded back to the commission. However, the commission reaffirmed the original decision, and because it was the main campus, they decided not to allow us to redesignate. So because of the failure one, it fails all. We were obviously forced to close all three.
I'm sorry, that was on outcomes?
No, on the appeal, we won the appeal for the remanding, and then because the decision to close the main campus occurred, and it was on, I believe, 8 points, it impacted the two branch campuses.
Oh, 8.
So the ID number was tied to the main.
So you're aware, we have different OPE IDs and different DUNS numbers for ASIS, and we had different ones for the East. We're under no fiscal reporting for ASIS with the Department of Ed, and we don't anticipate having any issues there as well.
Okay. So with the closed schools back east, there's 4 schools in Arizona.
Correct.
Are they tied to one ID number?
Yeah, one OEP ID number, yep.
And that's, where is that location?
In Tucson, Arizona is the main campus.
It is the main
campus.
And you're
the main? I thought Mesa was the main.
Tucson's the main campus.
And you're...
You're closer to us, probably.
You,
it used to be up north. It used
Cottonwood. Clarkdale. Right.
Clarkdale.
Yeah, and Clarkdale transitioned to Mesa, but the main is based out of Tucson.
So just to be clear, you still have a line of credit with the Department of Ed?
896, correct.
Okay. Are you on reimbursement?
On the East Coast, we were under HCM2. We were on HCM1 on the East until the denial of reaccreditation. Then they placed this Department of Ed on HCM2 solely for the East. And then that's how we've been continuing our business for the last 7 months under the appeal status. It has not impacted. We are on no reporting for ASIS.
Okay. All right. And your annual budget your annual budget for Arizona is how much?
Shannon Bond, do you have that in front of you?
The annual budget for 2019?
Correct.
Net income for the year would be $25,000.
I'm sorry. Forgive me for not being more clear. What is your budgeted revenue for fiscal year 2019?
Hang on 1 second here. Would be gross tuition would be $411,875.
That sounds like a quarterly. It's obviously he's asking for the annual number. I would say approximately right around like $2.5 million from a gross standpoint.
Okay. Which of the two Shannons can answer the question where you're at in terms of cash at the moment?
Cash at the moment, we're approximately $10,000.
Okay, so you're running a $2-point-something-million business and you're down to $10,000 cash. Is that an accurate statement?
At the current moment, we're waiting on some reimbursements coming back in, which will come this week. By week's end, we should be at about $120,000 in operating accounts by week's end.
Okay.
We meet an annual, and we have been meeting a biweekly payroll of roughly $110,000 on top of operating expenses.
Okay.
So we just had our payroll on Friday, which obviously deducts where our current operating cash is, and we're waiting for replenishment with our finances, both from our Title IV, but also with our HCM2, which are both expected deliveries this week. We've got our rosters coming in daily. We use a third-party servicer with Boston Education that does that. And then obviously our HCM2 reimbursements come through approvals, which we're also waiting on a chunk to come in probably this week or early next. But we've been meeting all our fiscal obligations while under. And then we have our, Kazari's also been making investments when needed to make sure that we have the capital to, you know, sustain and work through this area.
So we're not, this morning, we're not really here to make any decisions for or against you. We're just truly trying to understand the vital signs of the company so that we are not caught off guard, you know, should something...
No, what I would say is if you looked at even the numbers in front of you, if we reallocate, which is what we're, the HQ expense, which is extraordinary representation on here from what it will be adjusted to, what you'll see is we'd be running about an 18% profit in regards to overall. The reason it isn't is because HQ is so high and it needs to be reallocated in regards to what actually was loans and then what is like fees and so forth. So if you just solely looked at the HQ number, and once we get it reallocated to what it, you know, adjusted, I think you'll have a different representation of where we currently fiscally stand.
So forgive me again. I'm not sure I understand what HQ is.
Sorry, the headquarter cost in here. So
okay.
So the corporate headquarter costs, so forth. So obviously, you know, through this process, we've ASIS has loan money to cover expenses elsewhere, and that money will obviously be getting, you know, reallocated or back. But our fiscal strength is stronger than it typically is reflective currently. And I think when we get the adjusted financials to you for 2019, because we're working on clarity with our QuickBooks, you'll have a more comfortable representation of where we stand.
You know, that the composite score is probably the one thing to fear the most, because it, when you're below that threshold,
right,
all sorts of really ugly, scary things happen. And cash is the single biggest driver on that composite score.
Right.
And you guys are really skating on some extremely thin ice. I don't know if you've squirreled away some other cash somewhere, like $90 million in a reserve fund that I'm not seeing. But apart from that, and I'm not preaching or trying to educate, I'm just trying to say it doesn't give me warm, fuzzy feelings that you're doing well with the limited amount of cash when you're trying to run a business that's supposed to generate, you know, $2+ million. So
yeah, I'd only counter to that as I would say on the ownership group has shown extraordinary capability of infusing when necessary. And I also think that, quite frankly, once we do the consolidations, which are occurring as we speak and have already occurred, all the fiscal performance numbers will improve dramatically because we've obviously taken care of the responsibility we had to our students, and we're under the same accreditor. So obviously how we close those schools there will also impact the ASIS. And because we've successfully had teach-out plans that have been approved, I think very quickly the concern you may have will be alleviated because of the financial strength we have with our owners group making infusions if necessary, and to the performance of the portfolio improving as well.
From an operations standpoint, the good news is that we're on track for our enrollment projections, and we actually expect to exceed those throughout the next year or two due to the absorption of the collateral from the Cortiva closure. And in fact, not to be vultures, but we're marketing directly to that. And so we do expect to see, and we are seeing it, and we do expect to continue to see increased enrollments due to that, because there's not a whole lot of competition in any of our markets, save a few schools that can directly compete, especially up north. So along with the MOU with Prescott College, we do expect, and we're working on events to coordinate with them to especially grab some of their summer students that don't leave during the summer that are there full time but have shown interest in coming to either Flagstaff or Prescott for the summer session to complete a massage program. So we are looking at some definite increases in enrollment.
And if you look at the gross revenue and even the student population, specifically at those four locations in the last 2.5 years, you've seen steady growth in every one of those areas. It's one of the reasons we've been able to kind of shelter through this current period and really be optimistic about our future, is we have seen great growth, and that's why we are focusing back on our Arizona school specifically, because of the fact we've got great leadership in place that we've developed in the last 2.5 years, and they've shown great performance at a campus level from everywhere, even Mesa, which is the redesignation of the old campus in Cottonwood, building a population that's to a point where we have to expand our facilities because of the space is getting limited. Tucson's the same area. We've got to work in expanding that location because of the current active population. And our two destination locations in Prescott and Flagstaff still annually cover at a profit those locations. So we truly feel that with the consolidation in the East, and obviously what financially that absorbed in the organization, the reallocation of attention to the West, and then the growth plan, we're very confident with the staff we have and the performance we've displayed the last 2.5 years, that this is even though it's disappointing what occurred, it's an opportunity for us to recalibrate, reset, and rebuild, and build it in an area that we feel very comfortable with.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate your optimism.
So, just got the updated, it's not an audit, from TC Accounting Solutions, right?
Is that the morning financials?
Financials. Shannon just
yes, I can speak to that.
We have those. So here's a question. I'm saying this. It was a very interesting read, especially through the the lawsuit and our minutes from a year ago, because it actually showed up in the particular hearing last October, that we had questions about the same charges that your predecessor was charging the school. So essentially the lawsuit alleges fraud, mm-hmm. right?
Correct.
And so what we have here is basically a management letter, where it's not an audit, right? And it says that management has elected to omit substantially all the disclosures required by generally accounting principles. And it would seem that and especially given your owners or investors, I would think that they would want to do very thorough assessment of all financial controls. Because they're alleging fraud a year ago, that to do a complete audit, almost essential, given where you stand in terms of your cash position now, together with what transpired over the past year. It's a little bit disheartening to not see a full audit and a full review of the disclosures that go along with conflict of interest statements and all the elements that are part of that audit. So do you plan to do that? Either restate the 2018 or moving forward for the 2019 fiscal?
Well, for the 2019, obviously we'll have a in-depth financial audit. In regards to Shannon Bonder, the 18 that you provided this morning that we got from TEG, was that the audited financials?
No, it's not. Maybe if I explain this process going backwards a little bit, it'll help with these questions. We do have annual audits, and our last audit was performed for the closing when our parent company bought the companies in 2018, that we had a sub-audit done at that time. We recently just submitted our tax returns for 2018, and so the accountant, we hired a new accountant to assist us in getting everything back on track. So she is now working with our auditors to provide them the information they need, and they will be performing the annual audit. Our new year end our fiscal year end is 12/31. Our year end for audits is 4/30/19. So
So we are in process right now with that audit, which will be submitted at the end of October to the Department of Ed.
And us.
And you'll submit it here?
Of course, yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
So you're saying that they did conduct an audit prior to the transfer and sale?
What they did, they did a sub audit as of the closing date, which was 4/17/18.
Okay, so stub. I get it. I'm just kind of amazed that. I mean, I'm not an accountant, but there was, we questioned Mr. Merwin about some of the expenses that were in the income statement. Rather suspicious. At the time. So, I don't know who did the due diligence before he closed with this. All right, so if you can submit the audit here for October, that would be good.
You, Mr. Chairman and Mr. know they are scheduled for the October board meeting because of the actions taken by Asset. What I would request that you do, because so much has happened since April, that you...
The actions of Asset, I'm trying to clarity. There's no punitive action currently with Asset.
Okay. Semantics. They've deferred accreditation.
That's correct.
So if you would provide an executive summary of the change in the management team, and a summary of the lawsuit and where it stands, more of an update that the board will have in advance.
Yeah, we had that conversation just last week, and we absolutely will once we finalized our report to them. Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. And also include what your role was as a consultant.
Okay. All
right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Arizona College. What?
Probably spoiled.
This reverse alphabet was really designed to just keep you here all morning.
Yeah. Well,
I do want to say that.
It is actually fair, so I get it. I mean, if I was whoever's at the bottom of that list every time, I'd feel like, yeah.
Since this might be your last meeting here.
Can you introduce yourself?
Yeah. Nick Mansour, president of Arizona College.
So for our opening comment, before you make an opening statement, I want to say that I think Sonoran Desert Institute thumbs up for rock star status. Made that comment, or someone made that comment. I would reserve that for Arizona College.
Your vote is for Arizona College, for the record.
As chair of the committee, I'm saying, because I know that when... Nick took over. I think that Arizona College had seen many years of losses. I think the growth here in Arizona, and I know you opened a campus in Dallas.
Yeah.
Very commendable. So, say that from the outset. We thought it would be good for you to enjoy watching someone else get grilled. The $106 million of losses from Galvanize, you might want to just put in for a job application there.
Yeah, no, you guys did a lot of...
But go ahead.
A lot of hard work. Well, when I took over, Arizona College was profitable. It remained profitable, and then we purposely started some things that made it unprofitable. So I appreciate that. Anyways, I think you guys should have two things that we submitted. We submitted our June financials, which for us is just one quarter, our first quarter, and then we submitted the audit for us, FY19. We're having a good year, our first quarter. We did just over $9 million in revenue. That's up about 37% from the year before. I am fluent in EBITDA. We have $900,000 of EBITDA and about $600,000 of net income. And as of June 30th, $7.6 million in cash and no debt. Our audited financials, I think, are pretty much largely what we submitted unaudited previously. We finished the year just below $32 million in revenue. which was also about 36% growth from the year before, $2.8 million of EBITDA to $1.4 million of net income. We had $6.8 million in cash at that time and also no debt. Probably the only other thing to say is we're projecting we'll finish the year probably right around $40 million in revenue, projecting that we'll be profitable. That's probably it. I mean, we still have capital commitments from our investors that we have yet to draw in that are about $4.7 million in addition to that. So, yeah, things are going very well, but anyways, that's probably it.
That's all you got to say for yourself. That's it.
Was that? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's been good. You know, you know how it goes. You get more credit than you deserve when things are good, and you get a lot more blame than you deserve when things are bad. So I don't know. I take it with a grain of salt. But obviously it feels better to be on this side of the equation than the other side of the equation.
No questions. I just commend you on getting things turned around and everything's trending and looks like you're going to come off reporting. So well done. Well done.
Great.
I'll make a motion.
Wait.
You can't do that?
No, technically you can't. And God, I hate doing this. I really do.
No, it doesn't matter really.
Typically, because your two-year requirement, if they're 2 years, they go on 2 years.
Of reporting?
Of reporting positive till you remove them.
Although I'm getting tired of all this.
You know, you could maybe send the receptionist that you're next to the next meeting.
I thought we were just waiting for the audited financials. I thought we had 2 years.
No, last year shows a loss.
Yeah, there was the change of the Trump tax change, our deferred tax asset was reduced, which made our net income be negative. So that is accurate.
Not in statute or rule. I have typically said no. You have, I think you asked me, and I know Brookline has asked me, and I said no. You have to have 2 years of positive income, but that's just me.
Maybe you could call in next meeting by bat phone from the parking lot or something.
Yeah, well, when is it in December?
December 12th, I think.
I think you're going to be out of country.
A couple days in December, but okay, I'm pretty sure it's the
12th. So are you saying that I might have to be here for all of next year, too? Which is okay. I'm not, what's that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So December, I may be taking some vacation, so I may not personally be here, but, you know.
Up to you. I mean, I'm not the boss.
Seems unfair that you're not going to be here all year next year, but that he might have.
I'm going to go there, but.
And the previous year loss was caused by the Trump tax cut?
Yeah, I don't have them in front of me, but we certainly were positive from an EBITDA standpoint and would have been positive from a net income standpoint, but. We have a deferred tax asset of I can't remember how much that, you know, his tax cut was at the corporate level, maybe 25% or something. So it reduced the deferred tax asset by 25%. So you have to take that as a write down in that year. Technically, that's true.
Up to you. Yeah, I'm going to.
I think they're trending so positively that there's no need to see them again, but I don't want to run against the grain of whatever policy is. The two Muppets in the balcony.
Let's just say we would. Okay, so then you'll have to. I won't have to be so nitty. We could probably pull a couple more off. That would apply to. So, it's your discretion. Granted, if we would, you're in January, aren't you? You're January.
They're March. Their renewal. They're going through the renewal.
Just did your audit, so it still would show. I mean, if we would see a trend, they come back. Not a trend. If we see a loss.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
If you see 1 year of a loss.
Yeah. Because we do ask for, so let's say you're in January, so you're submitting shortly, so your last audit was March.
Yeah.
Then we probably would ask for in-house, and if we saw a loss, might make us a little concerned. But again, it's up to you. Like you said, I'm whatever.
All right.
You have a lot of.
Am I the last one here today?
Yeah.
Every,
maybe there's somebody on the phone.
I think we've had eight. Everything is true. I would make a motion.
Second the motion.
I don't. Yeah.
Do you agree with that stipulation?
I don't have any objections to that. Yeah.
They're gonna have to fight harder if you want.
Holman and I.
Dick Lipke. Yeah.
Okay.
And I love seeing you guys, but maybe we can do it over lunch or something. So. All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
So Archway.
Archway, she came in this morning.
Uh-huh.
And informed us that, and she will be sending me a letter, that they have decided to not continue the license. They weren't required. They opted back in. So she, got Becky, so she may come back or not, but so.
Okay. All right, it's 12:18.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Guys.